Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, hear from Joanne Lee Molinaro about her new cookbook, The Korean Vegan Cookbook, Reflections and Recipes from Oma's Kitchen. Molinaro is interviewed by Christine Aliakel, a member of the Chicago Council of the American Writers Museum. This conversation took place October 12, 2020, and was recorded live at the American Writers Museum. We hope you enjoy entering the mind of a writer.
I am so excited to introduce and welcome Chicago's newest cookbook star and, internet darling, Joanne Lee Molinaro, also known as, of course, the Korean Vegan. Joanne is a Korean-American woman who was born and raised right here in Chicago. She decided to go vegan back in 2016, and the Korean Vegan emerged as a passion project shortly thereafter. She has since developed this immensely popular social media following, especially on TikTok, where she's really known for her creating these short form videos of her creating these like beautiful Korean vegan dishes and incorporating personal stories and narration on top of it. She's also been featured in a variety of publications. I'll list some of them up here, but the list has grown exponentially over the past few weeks. She's been featured in things like Salon, Healthy-ish by Bon Appetit, The Atlantic, The Kitchen, Thrive, Veg World. She's been on the Food Network. The list goes on and on. In my opinion, she is just a rock star, and I'm sure many of you in the audience can attest to that as well. On a personal note, I have been following Joanne for a while now, at least on Instagram, because I'm not cool enough to be on TikTok that regularly. But I just have to say, I really admire her honesty, vulnerability, and authenticity with the stories that she's sharing. She really does keep things real. And for me personally, I just really appreciate hearing her perspectives, especially about her first generation experience growing up with an immigrant family and community in Chicago. Some of her stories are just so raw and so emotional. I've definitely cried at a few of them, and I know I'm not the only person in this room who has done so. And she's sharing these really beautiful stories, all while she's showing us how to create these wonderful Korean vegan dishes. And this is all taking place in literally the course of a minute. So I'm constantly amazed by her storytelling abilities. And I'm really just so excited for the beautiful cookbook that you all should get a copy of with your ticket tonight. I'm really excited to just try out some of the recipes. So with that, please welcome Joanne Lee Molinaro.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Christy. Thank you, everyone. I'm like so amazed.
So Joanne, maybe we could start just with what should be a simple question. It might be more loaded, but I basically just want to know how you're feeling. So today's a very big day. Your book launched, your very first cookbook launched. You are kicking off your book tour here in your hometown of Chicago with a sold out crowd, and your parents and family are in the audience. How are you feeling? Has it all sunk in? Or
I don't think it's possible for it to all sink in. I think mostly I am feeling like I'm watching a television show of somebody else's life. But honestly, immense gratitude to the community, to all of you coming out on a Tuesday night on a really rainy, not fun day. And also just incredibly humbled by everyone. So that's what I'm feeling the most, and hoping that you guys like my book.
Well, thumbing through the pages very briefly before this, it's as beautiful as I imagined it to be. And it's another, this week is really big for you, not just because you're launching your book and launching this tour, but you also just, she also just ran a marathon on Sunday. Incredible. How are you feeling? I mean, I'm just going to ask you again. How are you feeling after that?
You know, amazingly, I have not had a moment to really sit down and rest since the marathon. And I actually think that was better for me. My muscles have not had a chance to really get sore, to get stiff. I'm constantly moving, but not in a very burdensome way. So I'm actually feeling really, really good.
Yeah. How was the marathon itself? Was it
everything you hoped and dreamed it to be, or was it and you were expecting?
You know, the weather was a little bit difficult. It was very humid, and I think most people experienced a not as fun marathon. But for me, I always knew going into it that it wasn't like I was trying to run the fastest marathon. I was mostly just trying to complete the race. And I got to meet so many lovely people on the course who were running with me, who were cheering for me. And of course, you know, my family was out there in this sort of incredible way. I don't know if you guys saw me, but I was like literally sobbing at the end. I've never cried that hard at a race. So in that way, it was unprecedentedly good.
I saw you post it. You were reposting other people's posts, and I saw something about there was a video where someone was like, they were standing on a balcony or something, watching down, looking down, and they were like, "That's a crazy thing." And that's crazy. I was like, oh my gosh,
that was funny. Amazing, and I needed it right then. Yeah,
that's so awesome. Okay, so why don't we shift gears a little bit and switch over to what we're here to talk about, the Korean Vegan itself. So I thought we could start. I know there's so many people in the audience who are huge fans already and are very familiar with your work, but I figured for those who may not be as familiar with the Korean Vegan, we could talk through like a little bit of an overview of kind of like, what is the Korean Vegan? How did you get started along those lines, maybe?
Yeah, so the Korean Vegan started out as just a food blog, and it was mostly like a tool for me. I went vegan in 2016, and at the time, I was really nervous that like adopting a plant-based diet meant that I wouldn't be able to eat the food that I grew up eating, which is Korean food. There's like no, you know, real Korean vegan blogs out there. I mean, there weren't a lot. And so I was like, okay, well, I could just, you know, give in and end up not eating Korean food anymore, or I could just try. And I started trying to veganize some of my favorite foods from when I was young. And my husband, then boyfriend, was very encouraging. And he was like, "Wow, you're such a good cook. You're the Korean Vegan. You should start a blog." And I think he was trying to just encourage me because he was the one who really pushed me into going plant-based. And so I was like, all right. And I don't think he realized at the time, because we had just started dating, like the kind of person that I am. And so by the time he came home from work, I had a YouTube channel, a Facebook, and an Instagram called The Korean Vegan. And that's really how it started. Of course, it's very different today, but truly in the beginning, it was just a, okay, you want me to do this? Fine, I'll show you.
And then I guess you mentioned like Facebook and Instagram and all of that. So I guess I think you started, I believe you started on TikTok last year during the pandemic, if I'm not mistaken. Can you talk through a little bit about kind of what made you decide to get onto TikTok? Because I at least normally associate that with like high schoolers doing dance videos. So can you talk through that?
Yeah. You know, well, part of it was because I was unfamiliar with TikTok. So I did not see the high schoolers dancing. And perhaps if I had, I'm not sure I would have joined as readily. But, you know, I saw a lot of other amazing content, including food content that spilled into my Instagram. So I would see all this TikTok content. And, you know, for me, I was, you know, I think a lot of us were experiencing loneliness, isolation, immense anxiety over our futures. You know, every day on the news, it was like the economy is going to crash, inflation, you know, and, you know, everyone's hair was on fire. And then on top of that, you know, socially, our country was going through some incredible, you know, divisiveness, you know? And so all of that sort of contributed to me being like, I need to get somewhere on the internet where I can just laugh and enjoy myself. And also, you know, I was seeing that these young people were coming up with this incredible new way of, you know, activism on TikTok, like through memes and things like that. I just thought that was so amazing. So I joined TikTok as a consumer. I had no intention of creating content. I just wanted to enjoy what everybody else is doing. But as is often the case, and as is hopefully the case for many of you, when you see something that's inspiring or when you see something that's moving or compelling, you sort of reach into yourself to see, well, how can I contribute to this? How can I participate in this discourse in a way that is accretive to not just myself, but to everyone around me? And so when I saw TikTok and I saw, wow, there's food content here. I know a little bit about food content. Maybe I can do something like that. And that's really how it all started. It was very unintentional, I have to say.
That's how the best stories, I feel like, start. They're always unintentional. So with TikTok, I believe, because I'm not too familiar with the videos because I follow you on Instagram mainly, but they are like 1 minute videos, right? So I am curious a little bit just around kind of your process, because your videos are, they, to me, they look professionally created. I don't know if they ever have been or they are, whatever, but I was thinking if you can kind of talk through what is your process, maybe starting just at the very beginning in terms of like what types of recipes, like how do you decide what types of recipes to develop a video for, and like how do you decide what stories to kind of pair with those recipes?
Yeah, so that's a good question, Christy. So the answer to the food part is like, I just make what I want to eat. It's very simple. Like, there's no strategy. I'm like, oh, French fries. That's what I want to make today. So like, you know, I follow a lot of food content creators, and therefore I'm surrounded by beautiful food creation. And every time I see, I'm like, oh, you know what? Today's a jjajangmyeon day. So I'm going to make jjajangmyeon. Or, you know, I'm not feeling well, so I want to eat sundubujjigae. So if you go onto my TikTok, you'll be like, there's like 80 different videos of sundubujjigae. because I don't, you know, again, I try to vary it up a little bit, but so much of TikTok is just like, this is me, this is what I want to eat, and I'm going to show you how to do it. Now, in terms of the pairing for stories, sometimes I will pair it specifically. So, for example, there's a TikTok that I haven't yet posted yet, but it's me putting together naengmyeon, you know, and the story is going to be about my dad, who's sitting right here in the second row. And he like doesn't know what I'm talking about. Daddy. But, you know, it's going to be the story about my favorite dinner with my dad, and how memorable it was when the naengmyeon came out for me, and you know what he said to me at that dinner. So sometimes there's a very specific pairing, but most of the time it's literally like, what do I want to eat today? And then while I go running in the morning, I'll think about, well, what do I want to share today? And it can be as random as like a random memory in my head. I had a random memory in my head about, you know, the time that my mom caught me stealing and how she like totally flipped out. And how I thought that was a very, you know, telling story, especially for parents out there who don't know how to handle, you know, kids and sort of the things that they go through. So there's really no rhyme or reason to the pairing, but, you know, I'm it's like literally just like an extension of my brain.
Awesome. So then maybe can we talk through like the logistics of actually creating the videos? Because you're cramming so much into just like such a short period of time. And they're all so emotional. So I guess I'm curious, like, if you script things out ahead of time, like, do you rehearse, like, all of that? And then who's shooting the video, like, all of that? If you can kind of walk through what the logistics look like, because I'm just more curious.
Yeah.
Than anything else.
Yeah. So I shoot, like, 99% of my content by myself. I have three cameras going on at the same time. And, you know, over the years, I've gotten very good at knowing how to shoot myself. You know, first as a photographer and then now as a videographer. I do have an assistant who works with me on occasion to help me on like large shoot days, but most of it is just me. And I have a really beautiful bedroom that I've repurposed into a kitchen. It looks like a kitchen at least. And it has wonderful lighting. So I'm very lucky in that way. In terms of the writing, again, 99% of it is written in advance. If you are able to, on the first take, get a story out in 60 seconds at the beginning, middle, and an end, well, then you're like way better than I am. I can't do that. So I think of the story that I want to share. And, you know, my stories, like, they're not parables or anything, but I do want them to have a message, you know, whether it's a message of empowerment, a message of, you know, anxiety, you know, how to cope with that, a message of love, a message of, you know, connection. Those things are very purposeful in my story. So when I write them, I'm trying to think of how can I get that message out, even if it's the subtext, which it often is, right? So I do write most of them in advance. And then I just, you know, kind of read them while, you know, I finish the editing. And then I kind of put it all together and, you know, add some music to it. Often my husband's music, who's a, you know, composer and a concert pianist. And yeah, that's kind of how it's all put together.
It's like the magic behind the scenes.
It's like a recipe.
So on that note, though, when you were talking about kind of the stories that you're writing in advance, is there kind of like a, do you have a strategy in terms of like what stories you're putting out there and when, or is it similar to the recipes where it's just kind of like whatever you're thinking about at the time you're putting out there?
It is mostly whatever I'm thinking about at the time. And I mean, of course, they are very much influenced by what's happening at the time. So as I'm sure some of you know, in February and in March, you know, when we were seeing so much crime against the AAPI community, that was on my mind a lot. You know, that was, I couldn't, you know, stop thinking about it. And so a lot of my storytelling was, again, aimed at trying to open people's hearts to my community in a way that was not like in your face, like telling people, no, you must listen to me, but more like I'm inviting you to have a conversation about this with me. Some of my content was more direct. You know, I wanted to provide information to people. And that's the wonderful thing about, you know, my community is that they're open to it. They're really, really open-minded and they've opened their hearts to me. And I take that sort of trust very importantly. Like, that's very important. I want to do it justice. And so, you know, it's always like what's going on in my heart and what's in my mind. But again, like I said, it's very influenced by what's happening around us.
That's awesome. So maybe transitioning from the world of like social media and TikTok to your cookbook, let's talk about that a little bit more, because I'm curious, like, did you just wake up one day and you were like, I think I should do a cookbook? Or how did the brainchild even start around this whole idea that has become a reality today?
So as I said, in 2016, the Korean Vegan was just a recipe blog. It was really just, okay, I'm here, I'm showing you how to make, you know, my version of galbitang or something like that, you know? And then in 2017 was when I started writing more on my Instagram, actually. I started using the captions as real estate for me to share a little bit of my writing. And some of it was like totally creative, like, you know, a poem or something like that. But you wanted to use that space, again, to share stories about my mom and my dad and my grandparents, because I wanted their stories to be read and to be heard. And a follower of mine who happens to have like a ridiculously large Instagram account, she was also a writer and she really enjoyed my writing. And so she reached out to me and she said, hey, I'm coming out with my cookbook. I'd like to introduce you to my agent, my lit agent, because I think that you should write something. It doesn't have to be a cookbook, but you better write something because I want to read it. And so she introduced me to my lit agent, who is literally, I always call him the man who made my dreams come true. And he called me, we had a chat, and he's like, so what do you want to write? Do you want to write a cookbook? Do you want to write a memoir? Do you want to write a novel? You're such a good writer, you can write whatever you want. And I was like, let's stick with the cookbook, because I was nervous about the other two options. And so that's basically how we came about, you know, deciding that it should be a cookbook, but one with a substantial amount of writing, because we wanted the stories to be, you know, front and center as well.
Yeah, that was one of the things I definitely noticed when I was thumbing through it, is that you've definitely incorporated so many stories, which is great because that's kind of what you're known for. So I guess when you were writing the cookbook, because I imagine like it's such a different process or experience than posting things on social. So I guess what was that process like for you, and like what were some of your biggest lessons learned or like most fun moments with the whole cookbook creation?
Well, I will start with the first question. The lessons learned is, again, it's like the bar exam. Don't think that it's going to be easy or a piece of cake. Like, that's what I thought. Like, I was like, oh, I make recipes all the time. I could totally do a book full of them. And I take pictures every day. This is easy. And, oh, I tell stories all the time on Instagram. I just have to write longer Instagram posts. That's what I thought. And that was very, very naive, I'll say, on my part. I think when you take out sort of the restrictions, you know, the parameters of, you know, a word limit or 60 seconds, and you're given sort of a blank page, can be very intimidating, and it's hard to structure things when the guardrails can, you know, come off, and that's what happens. So I found for me that the recipe development was the easiest part, followed then by photography, and the writing was the hardest part for me, especially because so much of it wasn't my story. It was the story about my mom and my dad, and I wanted to make sure that I was honoring their story in a really not just authentic, but in like a skilled way, you know, as a technician, right? So that was, you know, very challenging. The fun part about writing the book, of course, was getting to spend time with my mom and my dad, right? In a way that I probably should have a long time ago. Shame on me for having to wait until a book deal like sat in my lap for me to have an excuse to hang out with my mom and my dad. But we went to Korea together. The last chapter of the book is about our trip to Korea. We had such a fun time. There's like some hilarious video of my dad from Korea. So that was so fun. And seeing their stories unfold in real time was pretty incredible. And then, of course, spending time with, you know, the other women in my family. You know, we came up with this kimchi recipe together, cooking together, you know, making, you know, hundreds of mandu together. I mean, folding dumplings is a full-time job. So doing that as a team certainly was very fun.
And then how did you, I guess, come up with, so you were talking through kind of the stories that you pulled into the cookbook, but how did you come up with the recipes that you decided to include in there? Was there a strategy behind that?
There was some, obviously. Like if it were up to me, it would have been like 90% cakes and cookies and breads. But, you know, my editor was like, we probably want some mains. So we kind of devised like, okay, here are the kinds of foods that I want to give to the world, right? These are the foods that I love to eat. And so this cookbook, because it's my first cookbook, was literally like, what do I want to eat? Like, I'll just put all the things that I want to eat into a cookbook. Like I said, it would have been very dessert-centric, and you'll note that there are probably more desserts than any other category in here. But, you know, it was pretty easy. Like, you know what? I love kimchi fried rice. I'm going to put my best kimchi fried rice, you know, recipe in here. The cover is jjajangmyeon because I love jjajangmyeon. It's probably very obvious by now. You know, so it was really just a combination of my favorite foods and then putting them together in a way that made sense and that was, you know, aesthetically pleasing, but also like logical so that people could easily find where things fell.
And then this might be the hardest question of the night, but what do you have a favorite recipe in your cookbook?
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Somebody asked me this the other day. I was on, I think, Instagram Live, and they're like, what's your favorite recipe? And I was like, you know, I've been cooking out of my book a lot lately because, you know, I'm trying to create content for people and, you know, people are asking me for recipes. So I've been making a lot of them. And so it keeps changing. So like every time I make another recipe out of the book, I'm like, no, this is the best one. It's so good. So I've been making a lot of naengmyeon lately for the content. And so I got to tell you, my naengmyeon recipe is so good. I made it for my family. They were very impressed. It's spicy. So I'm just warning you, be prepared for the heat. But the sauce is so good. And the other day, I actually added like a little bit of vegan yogurt to the sauce, and I turned it into this incredible, like, creamy dressing, like, you know, to put to my sandwiches and stuff like that. So my naengmyeon recipe is really good. But I have to say, like, probably one of my most favorites is going to be the pecan pot pie, especially because the holidays are coming around, and my family loves it, and it's, to me, like, such a true representation of who I am, which is a little bit Korean, a little bit American, and completely totally vegan.
Perfect. I definitely jotted those down, so I'll be trying those first. So I guess switching gears a little bit, just in terms of, you seem to do it all, and I hope you're not offended when I say you seem to do it all. Like, you were a law partner for a very long time. You were training for this marathon while you were writing a cookbook. You're also this huge social media influencer. So can you talk a little bit about kind of, I guess, maybe what the past year has been like in terms of balancing your time with all of this stuff that's coming at you seemingly at once?
Balance is a challenge. I remember when I was a first year associate at the law firm, we went out to a luncheon with, you know, a bunch of other women attorneys, many of whom were like rainmaker partners. And one of them, she actually went on to work for the Obama administration and now is the GC for one of the largest companies in the world. And she said, I remember, she's so impressive lady. And she's like, balance, forget balance. You're never going to find balance here. That's not what you want. Okay. What you got to figure out is your values. Okay. So, and I really like took that to heart because, you know, you're a first year associate and this like super rainmaker, impressive lady partner telling you there's no balance. And at first it sounds really intimidating, but the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. There was no balance. I was a junior associate. I was sleeping on the floor of my office many nights. You know, I was, you know, working 18, 19 hours a day, like sometimes on a good day, you know, when we were in trial, I mean, I was eating out of vending machines, and that was like part of, you know, my life at the time. I'm not saying that's the best, but there are also some incredible moments in my career, like taking cross examinations, putting together a closing argument, feeling like a, you know, girl boss, and, you know, making sure that my clients were well tended to. So to me, you know, the past year when people have asked me, you know, how do you balance your time? Like, it's not really about balancing my time, but it's about making sure that I don't compromise my values and my priorities. And so for me, it's always like, you know, my family comes first. Health is really super important. And then it was my clients, you know, because I was a lawyer full time for most of the last year. And if I could do TikTok afterwards, that's great. If I can't, that's too bad, too sad. You know, that's just the way, you know, it works. And so that never really changed until I decided, okay, now I'm going to be a full-time content creator and lawyer on the side. So now that sort of balance has shifted. But I know actually some of my clients are here. I want to make sure you all know that you had 100% Joanne, even while the TikToks are going at all times.
So maybe we can segue into, I feel like one of the last questions I have is more of like a popcorn round mm-hmm. of just quick hits. And one of them I was going to ask you was kind of, it is a recent development that, you kind of left the law profession, from a full-time position at least. So I guess my first question is like, what was, describe yourself in one adjective, when you decided to, on September 30th, 2021, when you, basically rescinded your partnership within the firm.
Let's see. It's a passive adjective. I would say liberated.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome. Cause it's so clear throughout like all of your stories, you loved the law, like you loved serving your clients and all of that. So that's really, I mean, but I can imagine just with how much stuff you have going on.
Yeah. You know, I always for me, client service is the most important aspect of being a good lawyer. I mean, sure, winning at trials, all those things are important, but that's part of that package. And I love my clients. I really had the best clients. So that was always the enjoyable aspect of the job. But there are so many, as you know, there's so many other things that go along with being a partner at a law firm. And for me, I just felt like I'm so excited to start this next chapter of my life.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Rapid fire.
Mm-hmm.
What are all the marathons that you have run?
Let's see. I've run 3 Chicago marathons, the Flying Pig Marathon, and Indy Monumental.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And do you have a favorite? I feel like there's only one right answer.
Yeah, no, there's really only one. It is definitely the Chicago Marathon. I PR'd at Indy, but Chicago is my favorite. The crowd was incomparable.
Okay. Sticking with the Chicago theme, do you have a favorite restaurant in Chicago, vegan or not?
I would say... my favorite restaurant is Kale My Name. Oh, yeah, my friend Neiman is in the crowd, and his restaurant is literally like, I wanted to go there so bad after the marathon, but I couldn't move. So.
Okay, favorite. Do you have a favorite podcast?
My favorite, the Rich Roll podcast.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, Rich Roll changed my life, and he's why I'm sitting here today.
If you haven't checked her out, she was recently interviewed on the Rich Roll podcast. It is incredible. I listened to it the other day. I was working out and I definitely started crying. I'm telling you, I started crying at one of her stories. So definitely check it out if you haven't yet. It's really, really insightful. Okay. Do you have a favorite TikTok video or story that you've shared?
Yeah. Oh man. There's so many. I would have to pick two. From an artistic standpoint, my favorite TikTok even to this point is the one I made to AOC's voice. She has this really incredible sound where she's on the floor of Congress and she's talking about her experience of being called the B word and, you know, how awful that was. And I created a video of making apple pie while she's giving that powerful speech, with the juxtaposition to me as a lawyer, and how I was able to do both and combine them. I think from a personal perspective, probably my favorite video is the one I did about my dad. It's the kampung tubu, tofu. It's like my most popular recipe. And it's a story about how he wrote me this birthday card right after my divorce and how much it meant to me. And it was probably before the kimchi making video was like my most viral video on TikTok.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And favorite neighborhood in Chicago?
My neighborhood, Lakeview East. Okay. I love it. And Boys Town. Yeah, I love it.
Okay. And then the final question here is one thing you're most looking forward to about the book tour.
Two things. Meeting everyone. It's been such a pleasure meeting people, and like three-dimensionalizing the community is like, I don't have a word for it. That's been incredible. And I was told by my team that I'm allowed to share that I'm going to be on the Kelly and Ryan morning show. I'm so excited about that. So we're actually like literally flying to New York immediately from this event so that we can tape tomorrow morning. And I'm so excited about that. But they were trying to get me to come earlier. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I gotta do my thing with the Chicago people. So no.
It's like go, go, go.
Yeah, it is. It's really exciting.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for deciding to kind of launch your book tour here in Chicago. We so appreciate it. And we, of course, love having you here. So best of luck with the rest of your tour, and good luck tomorrow on the Kelly and Ryan
show. I know,
show.
I'm like terrified.
Yeah, I was like, I need to make sure you get out on time, catch a play, and all that. But again, thank you so, so much for everything, and we are delighted to have you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you all. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, learn more about Edgar Allan Poe and how the cities he lived in affected his life and writing with historian Scott Peoples, author of The Man of the Crowd, Edgar Allan Poe and the City. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.